Yep. My thing is, more I think is recording.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Excellent.
Yeah, hell yeah, brother.
Hell yeah. I'm going to put
on. Yeah, I love doing this damn podcast. So Keith, hey you, welcome. my name is Mike and welcome back to the That Chapter podcast, another epi. Kind of just go straight in.
Yeah.
Bite the pillow, we're going in raw for this one.
Straight in, kissing.
Yeah, exactly. You had your tattoo done. I'm just noticing you what's it called, cling film or whatever?
Cling film, yeah. Or what do you call it in America? Cellophane?
Cellophane? I don't know.
Yeah. You might hear some rustling.
What's so you got to...
I just got like more, it's got like a bit of color put into it.
Wow, and it looks really, really cool.
Yeah, it's a bit sore. We had to had to go over the elbow again. So that was so I've had my elbows done 3 times now.
Wow.
I've only got 2 elbows, man. It really fucking sucks. But it was actually really funny going in. So this has got nothing to do with the tattoo, but it was just when we were driving in, I got the bus into the city centre to get the tattoo done.
Yeah.
And we were driving over the bridge. Doesn't matter which bridge. Mm-hmm. We were driving over on the bus and I looked out the window. And there was a swan stuck in the bridge a little
what?
Bit.
What? What do you mean stuck in the bridge?
It was kind of caught in it. On that bridge, it's kind of like, I don't know how to explain it. It's kind of like wires, so you don't fall into the river. But there was like a swan caught in the wires.
Okay.
I was like,
in the water?
No. Oh. Up on the bridge.
Oh, on top of the bridge. I was like, what?
Yeah, like where the cars and pedestrians and the lewis goes by. Yeah, there was a swan stuck in that. So I was like, that sucks.
Yeah.
But then there was a guy walking by and he seen the swan and he's like, is he going to help him? He did. He helped the swan and grabbed his. I wouldn't have done it because swans are vicious.
I hear.
Yeah, they'll break your leg.
Oh, man, they'll go for you.
Break your arm.
They'll go for you and your family. That's what it
hurts. Yeah. They are evil. But he helped them out and he like took his wing out and he grabbed him. He's like, oh, that was really nice. Wonder what he's going to do now. He picked that swan up and he fucked him into the river. The swan was okay in the end. He was fine. Like, I'd seen him swim off, but man, I've never seen someone throw something so hard. That swan went so far. And it was huge as well. It was a massive thing.
Wow. You know what? Fair play to him.
Fair play to him.
You know, he really got in there. Nothing stopped him.
That's good for
him.
Yeah.
Good for him.
He saved us. Semi-saved a swan.
I'd say he saved a swan.
Saved it and he threw
him
off.
Off and it looked all right.
Then threw it off a bridge. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Swan is already having a great time.
Look, all's well that ends well.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. That's what I say too. I fucking co-signed to the fullest extent. So, yeah, what's up with you, Keith? Any spooky tales for us? By the way, just before you start, we will be recording our listener tales.
Mm, yes.
Probably next month. We want to film it for sure. And next time we can essentially do it is end of February.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to record it in Keith's spooky house. I got more listener tales. People are emailing me in. Thank you so much, everybody who emails in. I got some really good ones.
Fantastic. Excellent. Can't wait.
There's a lot of them. Like, this will be super long, but it'll be great. So yeah, I'm looking forward to that. But any spooky happenings in the house?
So I had something earlier today, actually.
Before
I came down. So just... not great, a little spooky, but so the hallway is quite a long hallway and it's got 2 doors to the left and then there's the door at the end into the kitchen. So I was walking down and the 2 doors were open and then as I was walking by, the second door closed as I walked by it.
Wow, that's
weird. I was like, that's fucking weird. But I thought it might be windows. Well, I had no windows open because it's freezing.
Yeah, yeah.
So I had no windows open in the house and I tried walking by it again. I tried running by it to see if it was like wind as I was going by. Nothing. It didn't close again. So,
wow.
I don't know, somehow this door just closed behind me, which is, like, it was a little eerie. Now, it wasn't too scary because it was like 2 o'clock in the afternoon. So, it was like, meh. But I think if it happened at 2 o'clock in the morning, it would be a lot scarier.
But, indeed.
Adding on to the spookiness of the house.
Yeah, ding, another notch in your belt there of creepy shit happening in your creepy house.
Yeah, hopefully something spooky happens when we're down there recording.
Yeah.
Yeah, hopefully get something good.
Yeah. I'll bring my little night vision camera. We can go ghost hunting. We can tell spooky stories. We talk about boys. Maybe do some of those things. All right, let's get into this whole episode. Today, we are talking about the Kamar Divan incident. It's fucking Kamar Divan, if you ask me. That's how I'm saying it. So in this whole episode of the That Shepherd podcast, we're talking about it. We're not doing a murder today. We're doing a spooky, unsolved incident in the mountains of Russia. Interesting.
It's a good story as well. Really like it.
It is a good one. It's not short on horror nor on mystery. This one isn't a whodunit. It's a whatdunit. The unsolved Kamar Divan incident. Now, many of you will have heard of the infamous Dyatlov Pass incident, which is really super famous. I covered it a couple of years ago on the That Chapter channel. It's been covered by many, many people. Really bizarre story. This is one which has a lot of similarities. It also involves the Ruskies, and it takes place in the monumental year that is 1993. A fine vintage.
What a year, man. Mm. Good year for movies.
Yeah. Jurassic Park.
We had Jurassic Park, mm-hmm. The Fugitive, Groundhog Day, Cliffhanger. Groundhog Day?
Cliffhanger? Groundhog Day? You? Right, no. Ned Ryerson, that's the only thing. Groundhog Day came out in 1993?
93, yeah.
Jeez, I thought it was way old. I always thought it was like an 80s movie. It feels older than all of the other movies you listed for some reason.
It does, yeah. No, I looked it up beforehand.
All right, cool. Fair enough. Because when you think about it, it came out the same year as Jurassic Park, which still holds up. Like, Jurassic Park still looks really, really good.
It does, yeah.
For, like, a 30-year-old, over 30-year-old movie.
Well, I don't think they used too much CGI. It was mostly, like, was that... Wasn't that like animatronics?
Well, even the CGI looks really, really good.
It does. Yeah,
when the T-Rex bursts out of the cage or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
That part, that still looks like phenomenal.
That does look good.
Looks better than a lot of other CGI that has aged like shit.
Well, I think it's too heavy on the CGI these days with movies.
Yeah,
I
agree.
You need to go back to like the way Lord of the Rings was shot, where it was more like, you know, costume designs and camera trickery and stuff like that.
Yeah, yeah,
it
yeah.
It just holds up a lot better.
It does. It does. Even some Lord of the Rings parts look a bit dodge nowadays. But you know what looks really, really bad is the prequel Star Wars movies, like The Phantom Menace. That looks like shit. It looks terrible. Yeah. Like Jar Jar Binks and stuff like that.
Yeah,
it looks so bad.
It does, yeah. Hasn't aged well.
No, aged like shit. And I mean, the movie is just pure shit. So it makes sense. Be gone with him. So today, let's get back to our story.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Oh, yeah, sure. I suppose you may as well listen to what this episode is titled, or talk about what this episode is titled. So today, we're talking about the Kamar-Davin incident. Located in Buryatia, in Russia's far eastern federal district, the Kamar-Davin Ridge is one of the oldest mountain ranges on the planet. This is a place where I can assure you that unless you happen to live there, you've probably never thought about it like once in your life. The Kamar-Davin area, it's just north of Mongolia, and it's the sort of place I imagine, you know, the gulags were at. There's simply nothing there. Endless plains, mountains. It's like pretty cool looking, but it's almost like humans haven't been there. If you're thinking of it in your head, just think of like Alaska or something. It's pretty interesting though, like the towns and stuff, it's very Asian. The people look Asian, the buildings look Asian. It's really more like Mongolia or China than Russia. If you look at like the towns and cities.
It's lovely. It's really scenic.
Yeah, yeah. It does look beautiful, which is why people will go hiking there, mountains, freaking boats, whatever.
I feel like hiking isn't the right term. Because like when you go out, like it's more like mountaineering, I guess. Because they're gone for days.
Oh yeah, it's hardcore. Like hiking just sounds like I'm going for a hike. No, this is like you're gone and like it's almost dangerous. I mean, this story is pretty fucking dangerous. So
like the last hike I took, I had a coffee. I was pretty sure I was wearing skinny jeans.
Delightful.
Took 40 minutes.
Yeah, exactly. You had a great time. You know, barely worked up a sweat.
That's it. Yeah, maybe it's more of a walk.
Yeah.
Well, it was around cliffs. It was a hike.
If there's a certain amount of incline on the walk, it counts as a hike. If you ask me. So the mountains in this area, despite having average temperatures hanging somewhere between minus 16 degrees Celsius and minus 18 degrees Celsius, which is 3 degrees Fahrenheit and 0 degrees Fahrenheit, or simply very cold, the area, it's very attractive. It's a very attractive destination for, as we were just saying, hikers, adventurers looking to test their skills against those darn Russian elements. The hardest of elements, absolutely, if you ask me.
Absolutely, man. And it's the Kamar-Davin Ridge is on the shores of Lake Baikal as well, which is actually, it's the world's deepest lake with a depth that exceeds 5,000 feet.
Wow.
So at the deepest point, you could fit two of the Burj Khalifas, the tallest building in the world, standing on top of each other.
Okay.
Or, to put it another way, 5,000 foot long subways.
Awesome. Great. Thanks for that.
No worries.
Thanks for that input there, Keith.
That little tidbit. I'm just setting the scene.
There's a really deep lake nearby.
It's actually really good. There's a lot of history behind it.
Yeah.
I didn't go into it too much, but it is.
Were you going to give us the entire history of Lake Baikal?
No.
Okay. No, he says shit.
I'm going to save that for myself.
Okay. So, in August of 1993, a group of Ukrainian tourists were rafting down the... we've already been butchering the shit out of Russian language, so I'm just going to keep doing it.
Okay.
Why stop? Why quit while we're ahead? The Snezhnaya River. Snez is what I'm going to call it. As they were rafting down the river, they came across a visibly confused, exhausted, and very emaciated 18-year-old girl along the banks. The girl was Valentina Udochenko, or Valia for short. Valia was the last surviving member of a 7-strong group from Petropavlovsk in Kazakhstan, made up of three girls, three boys, and her 41-year-old instructor, Ludmila Ivanova Korovina, master of sports in walking tourism, which begins as the coolest and ends as the lamest title anyone's ever heard. So, this group had set out, but only Valia remained. The other students were 23-year-old Alexander Sasha Kryson, 19-year-old Denis Svachin, 24-year-old Tatiana Filipenko, 16-year-old Victoria Zalasova, 15-year-old Timur Bapanov, and then, of course, the survivor, Valentina Udochenko. Now, mass hikes like this in this area are apparently a very common thing, and Ludmila, who's the 41-year-old leader, master of sports and walking tourism, she was very experienced in her field.
She was, like, highly respected among her colleagues and students. She was tough on her students as well, really kind of pushing them to the limits, but everyone agreed that she was an excellent teacher who really taught important hiking and also survival skills.
Yeah. She seems like she was one tough old bitch. But what had happened to her and the rest of the group? Valia was in a very bad way, and after being rescued by the kayakers on August 10th, she was nursed back to health. And she told an extremely disturbing story of what had happened to her group in those mountains, the Kamar Daban Mountains. The Mountains of Madness.
Ooh.
Do-do-do-do-do.
That was good.
Do-do-do-do-do.
Yeah.
The group had arrived in Irkutsk by train a week before. Were setting off from the village of Marino and walked non-stop. They had kept doing this rather than take consistent breaks to rest and refuel themselves. This is probably going back to what you're saying about Ludmila being very hard on her students. She wasn't one to stop and dilly-dally. She was like, you must keep moving.
That was good. You're getting good at the old accents.
Hey, listen, I keep trying. It sounds really good up here, so I don't care how it sounds everywhere else. This is all according to Valentina's account, of course. Just how reliable that is, we don't know. Even if she wasn't as completely crazed as the others, she was without a doubt suffering from extreme fatigue, and a level of hypothermia had an impact on her thinking and whether she was aware of it or not. So, the reason for why Ludmila was pushing them as soon as they set off so hard is very much up for debate. The leading theory, and the one I think by far the most sensible, is that Ludmila's daughter was also out on a trek leading another small group in that area, almost mirroring her own mini expedition. It's thought that the mother and daughter had probably arranged to meet at a certain point, and so Ludmila had rushed her group along, foregoing vital breaks and perhaps making decisions in haste in order to arrive at the rendezvous point on time. When they didn't arrive, Ludmila's daughter simply assumed they'd missed one another and pressed on with her own trip. No idea of the tragedy that had befallen the other group.
I think it's worth noting as well at this point that Ludmila, she was pushing the group so they could catch up with her daughter, as you said. But I don't think she was being like crazy reckless.
Mm-hmm.
The weather forecast had promised them clear, sunny skies. And also the area that they were hiking was, it was a very popular tourist spot, which Ludmila was extremely familiar with. And it was considered a generally safe place to hike, especially in the summer when they were there. Also, her students, they'd trained with her for the trip for weeks, and they were ready to go and they were looking forward to proving themselves. So it's not like she was like rushing them up Mount Everest or anything. And in fairness to them as well, the first 2 days of the hike, it went better than planned. The group, they were making really good timing. But on the 4th of August, at the beginning of their descent, the weather forecast proven that it was completely wrong. And they were hit with this rainstorm. And that was really the beginning of when things started to go wrong for them.
Yeah. On August 5th, at around 11 in the AM, the group were about a third of the way through this hike over untamed hills, mountains and wilderness when, out of nowhere and without warning, one of the tree boys in that party, it's believed Sasha, began showing alarming signs of some kind of seizure, and he began screaming from the back of the group. These symptoms began with the young man violently foaming from the mouth, before the group realized he was also bleeding heavily from his ears and nose. Sasha started to slip in and out of consciousness, and the other members of the group, freaking out, couldn't carry him for long. Within what seemed like no time at all, it was over. The foaming and the bleeding stopped, and he was the first to drop down dead. There was no obvious cause, and to the best of everyone's knowledge, he had no history of seizures or other afflictions that could have explained the sudden horrific symptoms. Those kind of things are usually disclosed before setting off on an arduous trip through the demanding terrain. And that must have been absolutely horrifying when they were just, as Keith said, it was going well. Mm. The last couple of days had been raining really heavily, which they hadn't been expecting. But other than that, it was regular old hike or mountaineering. When all of a sudden you just start screaming, bleeding, foaming, and then just drops dead.
And that was it. Like, he didn't go down quietly at all. Like I said, it's not like he just collapsed. He was at the back of the group. And as I said, he just started screaming. And when everyone turned to look at him, that's when, the foam and bleeding from the eyes and the ears and the mouth. It must have just been something straight out of a horror movie.
On August 4th, the day before shit started to go down, Ludmilla, as we said, the head of the expedition and an experienced hiker, she, for some reason, had thought it better to stop and rest on a bare slope rather than continue the hike for another 30 minutes, which would put them on a nearby ledge, which could have provided a group with wood suitable for a fire, trees to act as a windbreak, and a safe place to rest. The group, so hence, they'd gotten completely soaked during these days for some reason. I don't know why Ludmilla, leading up to this, had decided, let's stop here in the middle of an open field rather than rest somewhere better. But
and that's even weird. because from the rainstorm, like they were soaked, but also their bags were soaked, which added an extra weight onto them as well. So they were wrecked.
Yeah. So there's kind of been some scrutiny over what Ludmilla was kind of doing, her choices apparently at this time. But one person who never blamed her was Valentina Udochenko, Valia. She said nothing that went wrong was her fault. Rather, Valia placed the responsibility for the tragedy of what was to come on inclement weather. As we said, the forecasts turned out to be very wrong. Heavy rain persisted throughout a lot of the trip. So, the next morning was the 5th, the day chaos and panic tore through the group. It had snowed overnight, and conditions were even worse than the group had already suffered through. Ludmilla would have known the extra danger the fresh layer of snow posed to the already tired and cold group, and moved them and their gear to the tree line below where they had spent the night. Again, why this decision was only taken at this point is a complete mystery. Though she sent the group down to the forest's edge, why Ludmilla then remained with Sasha's dead body is another mystery. She sent the group away to go and get shelter and rest while she stayed with a dead man. Maybe it was out of some sense of responsibility, but she must have known that her duty was now to the 5 remaining members of her group, who must all, at this point, be suffering far more shock and panic than she was.
I think the reason that Ludmilla stayed with the body was because she'd known Sasha for most of her life and considered him nearly almost be like a son to her. So yeah, I guess when he died, it's understandable she mightn't be at the top of her game, but I agree with you. Like, you kind of need to stay with the remaining members, trying to get them to safety.
Right, yeah, if she was the leader of all this, take charge or whatever. But then again, as you said, Sasha had suffered a pretty horrifying death, and so
was a bit shaken.
Exactly. Next came another twist in the tale. After a while, the 5 youngsters returned from the relative safety of the forest to the ledge where things had gone so wrong. It's believed they returned because they heard screaming coming from Ludmilla's direction. And by the time they got back to where they'd spent the previous night and lost Sasha, they were greeted by a terrifying sight. Not only was Ludmilla also now dead, she was lying on top of Alexander's corpse. She too was bleeding from the eyes and foaming at the mouth. The group had now lost both the oldest and strongest members of their gang. So to put it not so delicately, they were up shit creek. The thinking amongst the group was that Ludmilla had died of a heart attack due to the traumatic sudden death of one of her students, and as you said, someone who was so close with her, though officials have never alluded to a heart attack as the cause of her death.
This must have been terrifying as well. Like, the group, they were experienced, but at the end of the day, they were still, for the most part, just a bunch of teenagers.
Exactly. Yeah. There were children. So the 5 remaining youngsters were now rudderless and quickly fell into a state of panic and despair. Only Valia was able to keep herself calm and composed enough to attempt to pull the students together and get them down to safety. However, Valia's attempts to get the others to follow her to a less exposed area and regroup fell completely flat. Despite her best attempts, she could not get the others to follow her, even resorting to physically dragging and pulling other members along. Unable to corral the rest of the students, Valia eventually had to give up on her attempts to persuade them down and instead focus on what little energy she had left on saving her own life. The sad fact is, had she continued to spend that valuable energy on trying to get the others in line, she likely would have perished herself. Cutting herself loose from the group and going it alone, while usually the last thing anyone should do in the wilderness, in this case, it was the only way to go. Alone, afraid, and fighting a constant battle against hypothermia, Valya took her sleeping bag, along with some food and what few supplies she could find, and she went down to the tree line alone. After a day recuperating with the rain constantly battering her, she gathered enough strength to go back to the ledge to find out what had become of the people she had left behind. The news wasn't good. Two dead bodies were now six. All four remaining students, Dennis, Timur, Tanya, and Victoria, had all seemingly succumbed to madness and to death. Ludmilla's body was exactly where it had been when Valya had set off for the forest, laid on top of Alexander, or Sasha, as he was known. The others were laid out in a rough line along this ridge, a few hundred meters separating them. Valya walked the line of the dead and closed each of their eyes. They looked to be in the same state, having suffered some intense, painful, and traumatic death, ripping their own clothes off, clawing at their throats, bleeding from their eyes. She had no idea what had happened, but she knew she needed to find help. Anyone who could help guide her back to safety. She took what little food she could from Ludmilla's backpack and headed back down to collect her sleeping bag before setting off to try and find some sign of civilization.
This must have been like very scary. Because like, I guess with the first one, the first death, it could have been anything. The second death is very questionable. But the fact that everyone in the group was gone now, it really points to there's some external force that's causing this. And then it's like, was I exposed to that? Am I exposed to it right now? So yeah.
Exactly. You're absolutely right. She must have been like any second now.
Yeah, I'm going to drop down
any
second.
Yeah. Too.
Yeah, so scary.
Yeah. So after a day of walking, Valya managed to find her way to the Snezahaya... Something like that, I'm sure it's the accurate pronunciation. She used an old relay tower to work out where she was and which way she needed to go to reach safety. And this is where she was discovered. Valya was laid out with her sleeping bag next to the river. Her sleeping bag was in the shape of an SOS banner, something commonly done by lost hikers to signal for help in the area. The rafters gave Valentina a very Russian welcome with a half a cup of vodka, VDK, and she straightened up enough to be able to give them a rough description of what had happened to her group. Despite, you know, what she'd been through and clearly being physically shattered, Valya had shown incredible resolve to get to this point alive, let alone being able to give any kind of coherent account of what had happened. Because what had happened turned out to be a lot worse than what I just ran through.
I read one thing. Apparently, when she reached the river, one of the first things she did was wash her hair.
And I've heard that.
Yeah. She said that she did this because at this point, she still believed that she wasn't going to make it. She was going to die. Mm-hmm. And if someone found her, she would at least have great hair.
Yeah. So. I've heard that people are also saying, she's obviously making it all up. After this traumatic event, she had the time to wash her hair. Fine. You know, it's like, well, it's pretty traumatic. Everybody reacts differently. She's probably still in shock.
And she still probably at this point really thought, as I said, like she was being exposed to this stuff.
Yeah.
She's still expecting to probably drop dead any moment.
Yeah.
She's like, I'm going to look my best.
Exactly.
And you know,
gotta look,
get it, girl.
Yeah, exactly. Gotta be a death queen. Valya described Alexander's sudden death after seizing Sasha, the first one to go, complete with foaming at the mouth and ears bleeding. She also described the madness that had followed the group's return to the ledge and their discovery of Ludmilla's body. Things were rough with the group, to say the least. Apparently, while Valya had been trying to reason with the rest of the group to get them, you know, away from the ledge, this completely, like, uncovered ridge area, you can look at pictures of it, it just looks like a hill, a bare, barren hill. Mm. She was trying to get them off this hill to a forest to try and get shelter. The others were just totally out of it. 15-year-old Dennis had persistently run away from her, even hiding behind rocks like he was terrified of her. Victoria and Timur also showed distress and ran around panicked and crazed, tearing at their own clothes. It was Tatiana, however, who had shown the most concerning behavior. As Valya tried to calm Dennis down, Tatiana ran away from the group and began to violently bash her own head against the rocks.
As well as bouncing her head off some rocks, Tatiana, she was also said to have been like clawing at her throat, just like in a desperate attempt to get some air.
Really, really horrifying. So when help finally did arrive to Kamar Daban, the bodies had already become partially mummified from the exposure to the extreme cold.
It was like 3 weeks later by the time that the rescue team got there.
Wow.
So
crazy.
I'm not sure why it took them so long to get there. Like law enforcement, they never gave a reason why.
Because it's such a remote area, I'm guessing.
Yeah, it was still quite a busy trail. Like, during this time, they were just one of three groups that were taking this trail. So I'm sure, like, during that 3 weeks, there were other groups hiking.
Yeah, probably nearby.
Yeah, maybe nearby, maybe past it.
Yeah.
Seeing the bodies.
Look at that.
That's not on the map.
Yeah. Exposure had caused each of their faces to become swollen and turn a shade of violet blue. Animals had also clearly visited the site, as all of the deceased had their eye sockets completely hollowed out. Jeez. Something, yeah, well, gruesome is also quite natural in these situations and wouldn't have come as much of a shock to the experienced rescuers. The bodies were laid out just as Valia had described, with Ludmilla laid over Alexander and the others lined up along the ridge. The other four were each dressed in only their leotards, common underclothes for hikers, and three of them were even barefoot. Naturally, in the freezing cold climate, that makes for quite a sight. I mean, this is in August, but still, it's
so cold. Yeah.
Very, very cold up there. So, you know, first thing you're going to think of when you hear of these people in their leotards and some without shoes on is that, oh, paradoxical undressing. They went crazy, they got hypothermia, and then they started taking their clothes off, which is very, very possible. The bodies of the six victims of the tragedy were transported to Ulan-Ude, where an autopsy was performed, with the official cause of death of each being listed as hypothermia due to exposure. While that diagnosis would explain some of the questions, like the, as I said, this paradoxical and undressing, the stripping of vital layers of clothes, it doesn't exactly begin to explain the symptoms of madness and apparent sudden onset psychosis that Valia had described witnessing. The entire incident was classed as shit gone wrong, misadventure, what have you. That's what the locals and the government would say. Valia, she returned to Kazakhstan, pretty traumatized about what had happened. And the only real account of the Kamar-Daban Pass is the initial one she gave. According to any resources I could find, she never spoke of it again.
No, yeah.
Apparently, yeah, she was just so traumatized about what had happened. At least she never publicly spoke of it again.
Mm.
So what really happened? Well, my friends, let me introduce you to something, a little something, I call the Yeti.
Okay,
hell yeah! I wish. Unfortunately, this isn't the Yeti story. But we do have some other theories of what really happened at Kamar-Daban. As some of you have heard, and as I mentioned at the top, I'm sure a lot of people are listening to this and saying, Dyatlov Pass, Mike and Keith. And yes, there's a lot of similarities between the Kamar-Daban incident and Dyatlov Pass incident of February 1959. So, just run through really quickly. Dyatlov Pass incident took place on Mount Kilatsikl. Appropriately, the Mansi to English translation is the Mountain of the Dead.
Nice.
As I said, in February 1959, the TLDR is that 9 Soviet hikers, 10 originally, but one turned back early due to illness, died under bizarre circumstances. And over the years, there's been a shitload of theories from aliens to monsters to psychic weapons, mass hallucination, a lot of things which could probably be copy and paste to this case.
Yeah. Do you know what's mad though?
What's that, Keith?
I'll tell you, Mike. So with that case, with the Dyatlov Pass,
yeah.
When you hear all these theories, it's always like, God, I wish that someone had survived so they could just tell us.
Mm-hmm.
In this story, in the Kamar-Daban, someone did survive and we still don't know.
Yeah, exactly.
So I don't think it makes a difference. Like,
usually when if somebody were to survive, you'd be like, oh, it's actually something really basic and simple happened, and you're just getting all your theories pulling out your ass.
Yeah.
And this is a person who survived, and it's like, it actually sounds even worse.
I know.
Like, I don't think even if she had died too and the bodies had been found that way,
it would have been hypothermia. So something went wrong.
Exactly. You wouldn't have imagined them bashing their own heads off the rocks.
Yeah.
It's really, really weird. So recent developments in the Dyatlov Pass mystery came from a formal investigation finally done by the Russian government, leading them to conclude that it was a boring old avalanche that was most likely responsible for the Dyatlov Pass mystery. That's always been a common theory, but the most boring one. So hence it gets the least attention. But hey, listen, why talk about an avalanche when you can talk about aliens or sonic weapons? It's far more interesting. So, unfortunately though, an avalanche doesn't exactly help offer an explanation for Kamar-Daban, as there simply probably wasn't an avalanche. There was a little bit of snow then, but not like avalanche.
Just
snow.
Like a dusting. No!
Yeah, I know. Plus, as you said, we have Valia, who probably would have noticed an avalanche.
Yeah.
So, there you go. I think we can cut out that
Scratch
one.
That off.
Yeah. So next, what about it was altitude sickness that drove the members of the party, the Kamar-Daban party, insane?
Mm.
So altitude sickness, could it have been that, Keith? do you think?
So I can definitely understand why folks were into this idea. Mm-hmm. Like the acute mountain sickness, it kicks in when you're up high and dealing with less air pressure and oxygen. And the quicker you shoot up these mountain ranges, the higher the chance you'll catch it. And as we know, Ludmilla was kind of in a hurry to catch up with her daughter. Mm. So they were rushing.
Acclimatized or whatever.
Yeah, they didn't acclimatize. Because I think it takes about like 2 weeks to acclimatize. Now, I don't think it's that big of a mountain, but yeah, they were still rushing up the side of a mountain quite quickly. And the symptoms of altitude sickness, they kind of match up with what the gang experienced, like being all confused and coughing up blood. Plus, freezing temps up there combined with less oxygen in your blood make you more prone to hypothermia, which is what was ruled as the cause of death. But there are some holes in the theory as well. For example, there were two other groups up on the mountain at the same time, and none of them showed any signs of altitude sickness. Mm-hmm. Also, even though in severe cases, altitude sickness can lead to fluid in the lungs, swelling in the brain, and death, for everyone to experience that, it's like a 1 in a million shot.
Yeah. Okay. All right. You grabbed me and yelled, you never let me go. That's a good explanation.
I'm gonna scratch it off.
Yeah.
Another one ticked off.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
We're back on aliens.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeti aliens.
Yeti aliens. How about nerve gas agent?
Okay.
Was exposed, which this is actually a leading theory, and I mm-hmm. think it actually makes the most sense.
I'm hooked. Reel me in, man.
Yeah. So the first and most widely considered as a serious option is the idea of a military or government experiment gone either very wrong or concerningly right, depending on what you think the aim was. The idea of the group being exposed to some kind of nerve agent it's definitely one for the more conspiratorial-minded among us, but one that has, well, a notable coincidence, shall we say. A particular Russian nerve agent called Novichok being used. Most famously, it was used in the recent past in the 2018 Salisbury poisonings. Father and daughter, Sergei and Yulia Skripal in Salisbury, England, March 2018. They were poisoned by Russian secret agents. This incident was then followed by a secondary incident in which a British couple were also poisoned by the same nerve agent, Novichok, thought to be caused by discarded contaminated materials used in the targeted attacks on the Skripals 4 months earlier. So that's how dangerous it is.
Yeah.
4 months later, and it was on contaminated.
Still highly potent, yeah.
Was still able to hospitalize people. A police officer was also hospitalized when responding to the original incident. Basically, the whole thing was an international shit show. It was across newspapers for many months. The thing, though, about this particular nerve agent is the effects it has are very similar to what the Cameron Tappan experienced. Also, the Novichok nerve agent, this particular Russian nerve agent, is known to have been developed by Soviet scientists between the years 1971 and... dun dun dun... 1993. Now, of course, the year 1993 is when the Kamerdaban incident took place, and what better way to test out your fancy new experimental nerve agent than on some hikers in the middle of nowhere, right?
No one will ever talk about it again.
No,
especially
exactly.
Not on a podcast in Ireland.
The rockets in, it's like shaking their fist at the sky. So, essentially, this theory simply says that the Kamerdaban group were unwitting participants in a human trial of Novichok. Maybe, perhaps, Valya was the control subject. Some have even suggested that her reluctance to speak to the press may be out of fear that this is the case, though it's more likely her unspeakable trauma is more likely to blame. I subscribe to the Novichok.
I like that
theory a lot. If it wasn't man-made, maybe it was like some natural one in the air or released from the ground. Mm. You know, like with like global warming, all this like shit is coming up from the ground, like anthrax and stuff like that. Yeah. Maybe it was like something to do with that.
I think this theory is my favorite. I have another theory, which I'll talk about after.
Okay.
But I think my theory is my second favorite theory. And it's kind of natural. And we'll get to it.
Folks, you heard it here first. Fucking hold on to your butts. Keith's got another theory. All right. Well, here's another one. Infrasound, my friends. It's an interesting explanation, which was actually suggested by a member of the rescue team that was sent to retrieve the bodies. So infrasound is both a natural and man-made phenomena, and it's basically sounds that fall into the extreme lower end of human hearing, usually described as being between 20 and 1.5 hertz. It can be audible, but to what extent depends on the person. All sorts of effects of infrasound on human beings have been reported, including vertigo, difficulty in balancing even while standing still, and other various types of disorientation. Some people have experienced bowel spasms.
The brown note.
The brown note, that's what I was thinking too. Yeah, exactly. Nausea, even unusual resonances in internal organs, including heart palpitations, have been documented from the sounds, or it's really the vibrations of the sounds that are causing this in a human body. That's actually one thing I patented that chapter tangent time. Back in the early days of YouTube, when I was just starting out, like in 2017, I made a video on why we see ghosts. And that's a common one theory of why people see ghosts, is it's actually, there's a certain hertz that when the human body hears it, it causes dread and hallucinations because of the vibrations.
Yeah.
And that's an explanation. That's why people see ghosts a lot of times in older buildings. Something to do with the structures, maybe wind going through a building causes a certain vibration.
The way it resonates through it or something.
Yeah exactly. And this hertz affects the human body, and that's why you can hallucinate. You can see things out of the corner of your eye. Yeah. You feel dread, you feel scared, you start hallucinating ghosts. And I've heard that as one theory on what ghosts actually are, because you get the feeling of like, oh, there's somebody in the room with me. You're just...
It's just a noise.
Yeah, it's just a noise. Yeah. And then you'll see like a shadow or something.
Or it's a noise emanating from the ghost, which is making you dread.
They're making that noise. Yeah, exactly. It's going... standing near the corner. Yeah. Sound like a didgeridoo. It's not me making a noise. That'd be awesome.
Yeah, man. Keep going.
So, infrasound could explain the group's symptoms, as well as explaining why Valia didn't seem to be affected in the same way as the others, or perhaps she was, just in a different way, because that's always the weirdest thing, is why Valia didn't experience either the sudden death or the psychosis of going insane and then the sudden death.
Oh, did you imagine she was deaf? No, I'm joking.
I would have thrown my can of Coke in your face if that was the case. The really interesting part of the infrasound explanation is yet another mystery. What generated the sound that essentially killed six otherwise healthy people? As I mentioned, there's a whole bunch of natural and man-made ways infrasound can be generated. Let's talk about the man-made ways first, because that's way more interesting. A nefarious option takes us back into the good old Russian government conspiracy territory. Now, this is let's talk for something about how you can create infrasound. Uses a weapon is what I mean.
Right.
A fair amount of online sleuths have suggested a diagnosis of Havana syndrome. Havana syndrome, super interesting, by the way. I think it's worthy of an episode in itself, because it's something I've always wanted to do a deep dive on. Is a term used to explain a long list of symptoms varying in severity from an annoying ringing in your ears all the way to unbearable pain and even confusion and difficulty in balancing. The name Havana syndrome itself comes from the first reported cases back in 2016 that just so happened to be reported in the US and Canadian embassy in Havana, Cuba, with several staff members complaining of a whole heap of symptoms. In 2017, the strange illness appeared to have become a pandemic when dozens more people, mostly almost only US intelligence officials and military personnel, they too began to have similar experiences in China, India, a couple of European countries, even in Washington, D.C. itself. Very strange. It was like it was only targeting secret agents or people who may be secret agents or spies or whatever around the globe, and only seemingly American ones too. So that's why they began to think it was a targeted weapon being used against them. Federal investigators from the U.S., as well as the Departments of State and Defense, all banded together, calling the incidents anomalous health incidents, which sounds very cool and bizarre and kind of creepy, and said most were likely unrelated cases or even psychosomatic, with the afflicted having heard about Havana syndrome, and then they say, oh, Jesus, well, you know, I have it too. Can I have the day off? Right, I had a few too many beers last night. I think I have Havana syndrome.
I was like, Havana syndrome, it kind of sounds like, you know, that you've too much rum.
Exactly,
And cigars.
That's exactly, yeah.
Came down with a bad case of Havana syndrome.
Oh, come down with Havana syndrome again. So, where do the Russians come in Havana syndrome? Well, despite the official line being that the incidents were AHIs, anomalous health incidents, that were lumped together, several members of the US intelligence community reported their own suspiciones that some kind of sonic weapon had been used to induce the symptoms, and the most likely culprit was the usual culprit, the Ruskies. Always. Even when it's not the Ruskies, it's the Ruskies. But then again, having said that, it's like given their track record lately, probably not them. It seems like they're not very adept at really anything at all.
Yeah.
So who knows? Maybe a sonic weapon was, again, they were, you know, experimented on by the Russian government. The power of suggestion is a powerful thing, of course. And the madness of the Kamerdavan group being, you know, all in their heads, I don't think that's real. I mean, it's a possibility is what people are suggesting, that it was either a sonic weapon or it was just a mass psychogenic illness and they all went insane because they believed they were going insane. Who knows?
Be cool if they made the sonic weapon to shoot out those hurts you were talking about and make you see ghosts.
Oh, or make you poop your pants.
Oh, that'd be better.
Yeah, I think so too.
Ghosts and shit your pants. What a combination.
Yeah, I know. Fucking hell. I think seeing one would probably do the other anyway. I think.
That's very true.
Well, and sometimes when I had diarrhea so bad, I thought I saw a ghost, so you never know. And of course, though, you can get infrasound from natural causes too. Earthquakes, violent volcanic eruptions, severe storms, even passing meteors can generate infrasound. However, there's one specific natural cause that stands head and shoulders above the rest on the probability scale. It just so happens that a major cause of infrasound is airflow over mountains.
And they were on about it.
Oh my god! Airflow over mountainous terrain has been observed and documented generating infrasound or sound within the infrasonic range. And given that our group were walking on a mountain range when things went south and each suffered mysterious unexplained symptoms, well, that could be a possible cause. However, I don't think it's that because I feel like this would be a well more documented thing if that was what caused it. People go hiking and mountain climbing all the fucking time. They've never bashed their own heads in against the wall and been foaming from the mouth.
Yeah, it feels like it'd be more just of annoying noise rather than making you go mentally insane.
Yeah.
It kind of reminds me of the, do you ever hear that, what's called Teom or Tomb Hum? Happened in like New Mexico. It's like this unexplained low pitch hum. Some people can hear it and some people can't. The people who can hear it say that they can hear it all the time, while others say that they hear it some of the times but they can tune it out, where other ones are like, I can hear it all the time, it's driving me fucking nuts.
Yeah.
So it kind of reminds me of that, but they think it could come from like the electrical grid or hearing problems or but it could be this as well, like I said, like airflow. Very, very, very possible.
Yeah. There you go. Keith, you said you had a final theory for us today.
So I have two.
Oh,
so
ooh.
One I don't really like. But
look at you.
I'll say it anyway.
Yeah, do the shit one first. I'll do it. All right, we'll scoff at your theory.
All right, so the first one is contaminated water.
Uh-huh.
So Lake Baikal is a well-known toxic waste dumping ground.
Well, it's very deep, as you said. It's like it 5 miles deep or something.
It is very deep, and it's extremely, there's like so much toxic waste in it. Especially like in recent years, just people are just like dumping.
Well, hey, this is 3G, you can fit a lot of toxic waste in there.
There you go, who cares? Fuck them. So.
Fuck you, Lake.
Stupid fish. So if the waste was washed downstream and into the water, the hikers could have accidentally drank the deadly toxins with their breakfast. The contaminant, it could have been one of those nerve agents that you mentioned as well that was put into the water. Valentina may have survived by drinking less or not even drinking that water. Maybe she had her own supply. But the most highly toxic substances take a few minutes to take effects, hence why all the hikers were kind of dying at different times. So maybe they all filled up their jugs and they were drinking at different times and they all started dropping at different times. The problem with this theory is that the deaths were an isolated occurrence. If it was the water source used by many tourists and it was so badly contaminated, it doesn't really make sense that only one group was affected by it.
Run with me here for a second.
Okay.
Right. So maybe there was like toxic water in the lake and it got sucked up into the clouds.
Okay.
Because that's how we make clouds, I believe. Okay. Something like that. I don't know. don't quote me on this. Yeah. But then, remember, it was raining a lot the 2 days before this shit happened.
Yeah.
And Ludmilla had them camping out in the middle of the open rather than getting shelter. So the water got extra drenched. So maybe the toxic water goes into the sky.
Okay.
It goes, moves along, the clouds have a little smiley face on them.
Yeah.
And then it goes, pees on them. That's the clouds peeing on people. They get it.
Yeah.
And that set a time. And plus they were going nonstop. They hadn't been resting properly.
Yeah.
So maybe they were really tired. They were soaked wet.
Mm-hmm.
And toxic shit made them go insane. Then Valya, she went into the forest. While the others stayed on the ridge.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know where I'm going with this. Yeah. But hey, I like where I'm going.
This could be the Cygnus talking. Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah. Oh, I've got it. Nova's got me.
So hot.
I've got nerve agents.
No, I like that. Yeah, I think it would take like a really highly specific set of circumstances for that to work. Possibly. I mean, stranger things have happened.
Yeah, because when you like, there's many theories. It's always made of a point that it rained a lot. They got the weather forecast wrong, and that also they had been going like nonstop. Mm. Very few of the theories kind of tie into that. Mm. So I'm like, well, maybe the fact that they were tired added into the psychosis or whatever they experienced. Yeah. And I don't know, they got some kind of illness or bug or something that affected, they were tired, they were wet. Maybe their immune system was like down because they were tired and soaking. I don't know. Mm. Hey, listen, this is just off the, this is original. This is OG Mike, you know, here. Original, I'm just off the dome here. Yeah. Listen.
The tinfoil hat is on.
I just say words, I have no idea where the sentence is going. You know what I mean?
It's a surprise for all of us.
Exactly, surprise for me too. So, what's the other theory?
Okay, I like this one.
Okay.
So, Ludmilla, she was renowned for her skills in foraging, and she would have taught this knowledge to her students. Because of this, there is a possibility that during their hike, one of the hikers came across mushrooms and added them into their breakfast, unaware that they were of the magic variety.
That makes the absolute most sense. That's the most likely theory. Yeah, they add like poisonous mushrooms
right?
or something.
Yeah. As a result, after eating breakfast, the effects of the mushroom poisoning kicked in while they were walking.
Yeah.
So psilocybin is the hallucinogenic chemical in certain mushrooms known as magic mushrooms.
Yeah.
Eating mushrooms that contain psilocybin, I think, can have a variety of effects like hallucinations, sickness, anxiety, and panic. Now, I believe these magic mushrooms, they have pretty low level of toxicity, making death through overdose extremely unlikely.
Mm-hmm.
However, it could explain why members of the group made such bizarre judgment calls, which ultimately led to their death from exposure and hypothermia. Also, it could explain the bleeding from the eyes and the ears. Perhaps that was just all hallucinations, which is something that people on magic mushrooms have experienced before. When they like have a really bad trip, it's like, oh, I've seen people bleeding from their eyes.
Right.
So I think that's a strong theory.
That's a good one. Mm. I like that one as well. Yeah, Valya, she only spoken of it once. She was extremely traumatized, tired, maybe a little bit drunk when she was giving it. Because they'd given her vodka. Yeah,
because if like
it's
I guess
a likely theory.
If you unknowingly took an hallucinogenic and you didn't know it's hallucinogenic,
yeah,
things would get fucking fucked up.
Oh, you'd be
real
scared. Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah. You wouldn't know what the fuck is going on. You'd be terrified. Yeah. All right, that's good. There you go. That's it. That's our theories on the Camara de Bampasse, an unsolved mystery to this day. Day.
Every time.
Yeah. It's I don't know why I burp so much on this podcast. I think it's classic Mike at this point.
It's expected.
Yeah. But yeah, there you go. Mm. Interesting story.
Yeah, I liked it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thanks.
You're welcome. You
Thank you. All right. Here, listen. Well, here, you know what, folks? You can let us know your thoughts on this mysterious case.
Mm-hmm.
You know, wherever you want to, really. So you can DM Keith on his Instagram now that you've cracked the case. Is your Instagram private or public?
It's still public. There's nothing on it. It's a picture of me.
You probably like, know you rarely even log in.
Yeah, yeah. Like, there's nothing very... Like, there's nothing on it that would... I'm worried about that people see, so...
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, there you go. All right. Thank you so much for listening. Keith, any final thoughts?
I don't know. If you see some mushrooms on the ground, don't pick them up and eat them. Or do. I'm not your mother. I don't care.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You know what? Yeah. You do you.
Yeah.
You do you. That's what I always say. Listen, who am I to judge? All right. Thank you so much for listening. It means a lot to me and Keith. As always, new episode of the That Trapper Podcast out every Monday mañana. So give it a go. And yeah, listen, kind of wraps up this old one. I'm going to go get some medication right now. So we'll look forward to that. But hey, listen, guys, until the next one, take care of each other and yourselves because we love you.
And I'll see you.
All right. Thanks, guys. How do you pronounce Camara Daban?
Camara Daban incident.
Camara Daban.
Camara Daban.
Ah, fuck, I'm saying Camara Daban. This is how I say the damn thing.
Camara Daban.
Camara Daban. This thing got fun to say, though. Camara Daban.
Camara Daban.
Camara Daban.
Camara Daban.
Camara Daban.
Camara Daban.
Come on, Daban. All right, come on for a few points. Camara Daban.
Camara Daban.